Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
And packing on up, I'm laying down, driving this rig from town to town, and you oversized load, never gonna slow me down. And you oversized load, you never gonna slow me down.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Brad Williams? Y'all like Brad? Brad Williams fronts Arkansas's premier feel-good country band, the Salty Dogs, whose music has been featured in TLC's Trading Spaces and HBO's Rectify. More can be found at thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at the Historic Arkansas Museum in the heart of downtown Little Rock, Arkansas. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right here, playing for us tonight, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Among other things, Mark was a featured house guitarist at the late Junior Kimbrough's Juke Joint in Tullahoma, Mississippi. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? Each week we feature an artist, so tonight's featured artist is Arkansas artist V.L. Cox with her incredible screen doors with mixed media portraiture, which are for sale. Our listeners can find out more about these pieces, V.L., and her artwork at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Tonight's storytellers are all from Arkansas, and their stories all take place here in the natural state. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Later tonight, Alan Hale takes us to a graveyard in northwest Arkansas, and we'll end the night with Haley Valines and Prescott calling the Hawks. But let's start the night here at Tales from the South in Hot Springs with Denise Parkinson in The Legend of Happy Hollow.
It was a sunny autumn day as my husband, our four-year-old son, and I meandered along a tree-lined sidewalk in downtown Hot Springs, Arkansas, where we had moved just a few months before. We wound around to the base of Hot Springs Mountain and came upon a group of folks filling up bottles and jugs at something called Happy Hollow Spring. When we stopped to inquire, the people assured us that here was the best drinking water in Arkansas. No, the best in the United States. Heck, in the world. We had assumed all the springs were hot. The jug fillers explained that Happy Hollow Spring is a cold spring that originates a few hundred feet beneath the ground, rather than thousands of feet deep like the area's hot springs. I filled a cup and handed it to our son, and he readily took a long drink, and then another, and then another. His face lit up as he asked for more, more, more. I didn't know what it was about the water, but it sure made him happy. 4 years earlier, our son had been born with a heart murmur. My husband and I were completely unprepared. Our baby was big, 9.5 pounds big, and so beautiful and well-formed. But there was something different about him. I noticed he struggled during feedings and seemed to breathe too fast. So when the doctor listened through the stethoscope and said, "Oh, now that is a big heart murmur," my husband and I went into shock. The doctor sat us down and explained what a ventricular septal defect is, answering our bewildered questions while raising a host of new ones. What would happen to our little guy? We were stunned when no insurance company would agree to cover the little guy with a hole in his heart. Every insurance agent in Memphis labeled his defect a pre-existing condition. Pre-existing to what? To his actual existence? We were floored. Checkups, which the baby got at least 3 times a year, cost $2,000 up front for the echocardiogram. This test would determine if open heart surgery were necessary, and if so, when. He was prescribed a powerful medication. Months went by with no change in the defect. Thankfully, no surgery was scheduled. By the time little guy was 3 years old, our savings were sorely depleted. Every ear infection or childhood illness produced waves of panic, along with prayers that his heart would be okay. Then, one day, just after Halloween, the hubby came home from work early and announced he was laid off. This was in late 2007, the beginnings of the current Great Recession, or, if you prefer, the not-so-great Depression 2.0. The hubby sounded weary and downcast, unlike his usual stoic and pragmatic self. For the first time in our marriage, he asked me flat out to decide our next move. Should we stay in the big city where he and our son were both born and where our extended family lived nearby? Or should we head for the hills and raise our little guy in the country? I heard my voice answer, "We're moving to Hot Springs, Arkansas. There's water, trees, less people, more room, and who cares if it's poverty with a view?" To this day, I don't know where that reply came from. I had never pictured myself living in Hot Springs, despite growing up in Arkansas and learning to ski on Lake Hamilton. I had always considered little old Hot Springs a bit behind the times. The town seemed more of a destination for retired couples and weekend vacationers, not my idea of home. Though surprised at my insistence, the hubby readily agreed, and we began driving over from Memphis on weekends to look for a place to rent. We astonished family and friends by packing up and moving to Hot Springs a few days before Thanksgiving. We had searched for a little house in the big woods, but those are hard to come by on short notice. Instead, we leased the upstairs of a grand old 1920s duplex in Hot Springs Historic District. The rooms were small, but the surroundings were nice. The neighborhood is adjacent to the National Park Forest and Trails. West Mountain became our big backyard. Also close by was downtown Hot Springs, Bathhouse Row, a slew of art galleries, and the farmers market all lay within easy reach. The first indication that we made the right move happened barely a week after we got settled into our new place. The weather turned downright balmy, so we took little guy to a park. Exploring along the banks of Hot Springs Creek, our son suddenly got excited. "What's that?" he cried, pointing to the edge of the stream. We all got down on hands and knees and stared into the shallow, crystal clear water. Something darted and flashed among the pebbles. A crawdad! Our son's very first crawdad, and here he was almost 4 years old. "Do you know how long we could live in Memphis without seeing a crawdad?" the hubby observed, as we kneeled in wonder at the tiny creature. I shuddered at the memory of various items found in parks we frequented in Memphis. Empty whiskey bottles, discarded undergarments, hypodermic needles, and other things even more unfit for a family audience. We played tourist all over Hot Springs, taking little guy to parks and attractions, including Mid-America Museum and the century-old Alligator Farm and Petting Zoo. We took him to Tiny Town with its cool model trains, dancing bears, and epic miniature waterfalls. At Magic Springs and Crystal Falls Theme Park, little guy bravely rode every roller coaster that he was tall enough to board. He learned to swim in a swimming hole and went crystal mining, diamond mining, canoeing, and fishing with his dad, all things impossible to contemplate in the middle of a huge concrete-covered city like Memphis. And then he and we discovered Happy Hollow Spring. We started bottling the water and taking it home every week. The next breakthrough came with the discovery of an insurance program that would offer coverage to our son. By this time, he was 5 years old. After the necessary referrals, we set off for Arkansas Children's Hospital to get another peek at his ventricle. We pretended to be on a fun adventure, but inside, I was a total mess, dreading and hoping and praying for a miracle. I am happy to report the miracle came during the echocardiogram. We left the hospital floating on air. Where once there was a sizable hole in little guy's heart, there was instead a mere pinprick, shrunk so small as to be barely discernible. Over the course of the next 2 years, the heart murmur disappeared entirely. Our once rather sickly little boy grew tall and tanned. An excellent swimmer, he adores the water. We found a place in the woods and moved there to live beside a branch of Gulfa Creek. Our son still drinks Happy Hollow water with nearly every meal, even breakfast, preferring it over milk or juice, although for a treat, his favorite beverage, hands down, is root beer. Hot Springs Superior Bathhouse is now home to a popular restaurant that brews root beer using local spring water. Best root beer ever. I'll never be able to prove that Happy Hollow cured our boy, but one day, not long ago, I was talking with a national park employee, telling him my story of the heart murmur and the spring water. He explained that the cold spring's pH balance and naturally occurring magnesium offer a rare combination. Happy Hollow Spring, he said, is something to be respected, if not credited with powers of health and healing. And as I pour myself a cool glass from the jug in our refrigerator, I'll have to say I'm inclined to agree.
Denise White Parkinson is an Arkansas author and photojournalist. Her book, Daughter of the White River, concerns tragic teenage heroine Helen Spence. Her bio of Helen Spence appears in the new anthology, Arkansas in Ink. Next on Tales from the South, Alan Hale's family returns home to Northwest Arkansas, and it's time for a change in learning to live.
It was a spankable offense in my house to wake my mom up. She worked late and needed her afternoon nap. Well, on one particular day, I guess I had the TV too loud or I made too much noise in the kitchen. "Go cut me a switch," she raged. I was 12 years old and crying. It wasn't just the physical pain of being switched. It was the humiliation that would wash over me like warm water, making me go cut my own switch seemed to me to be particularly sadistic and insidious. I was bawling and reaching for a twig about the size of my little finger when she yelled from the doorway, "That's not big enough. Get me one from the tree up the hill." We came to Arkansas 2 years earlier. We were pulling an old Dodge with Oscar, the family dog, sitting in the driver's seat, having a good old time as we rolled along Route 66 in an easy haul. A cheaper version of U-Haul that probably went out of business a long time ago for many good reasons. Easy Haul had provided a tow bar for an additional fee. It was 1976, and we had just made it out of California on our way back to Arkansas when the tow bar snapped. We were made aware of this fact when the car trying to pass us, going downhill, was occupied by none other than Oscar, the family dog. Our safety chains were the only thing that kept the car from passing. My dad floored the gas, and we started up the next hill. Slowly, the Dodge speed decreased and eased, and we moved everything over to the shoulder. He walked off to find a payphone, leaving my mom, the dog, and me. We waited. We poured some water for the dog and ate some snacks that my mom had packed. Hours later, the Dodge was being towed, and we followed behind in the big Easy Haul truck. It would be the next day before we could get the tow bar welded, and we repeated this procedure a couple of more times before reaching Arkansas. It was like a nightmare. Each time the tow bar snapped, It was re-welded in a different location. The welds were the strongest part of the tow bar. I've noticed ever since that the U-Haul tow bars are large triangles, and I can really appreciate the better design. I heard a couple of reasons for our trip. My mom said it's because my dad was worried about the new attitude toward drunk drivers in California. The cops wouldn't be buying him a cup of coffee anymore and telling him to head straight home. Mothers had organized and were demanding drunk drivers get jail time and lose their driver's license as well. My dad's story was that his parents were getting older and it was important that he be there before they passed away. Years later, I would make the same trip as my parents, nearing their death. We arrived at a little brown house on a dirt road in northern Arkansas. It didn't have an air conditioner, and the water cooler we had brought from California wasn't of any use. We were happy because we didn't have to pour water into the pan. But the very reason we didn't have to pour water into the pan was the reason it didn't work. Evaporative coolers don't work in high humidity, so we were stuck sweating. My mom cried because my dad had moved her to the sticks where she couldn't get a job, and I think she cried because of the heat and the dust from the dirt road. My dad took $2,500 and bought a new pickup in Harrison, Arkansas. We had to wait for one of the salespeople to take a chance that he was a real buyer. Dad was a little angry at being judged too poor to be approached. It was the basic model without AC or power steering. The Dodge sat in the front yard, and I noticed grass growing in it. I wondered if it was growing through the floorboard, but upon closer inspection, I could see it was growing out of the floor of the Dodge. My dad had cracked the window so the heat wouldn't crack the windshield, and apparently dust and seed had gotten into the floorboard. Now the car was a greenhouse. He sold the car for a couple of $100. He panicked when he remembered the bazooka. I asked him why he had a bazooka, and he said everyone was taking souvenirs from the army and he wanted something too. So he saw the bazooka and threw it in the trunk. He didn't have any bazooka shells or rounds, so it wasn't dangerous. Anyway, we never heard anything about the bazooka. We raised 10,000 free-range turkeys at the Brown House. Actually, it started off as 10,000, but many died before we sent them to the market. Turkey hawks, foxes, wild dogs got some. Also, turkeys will start picking on and pecking one turkey that is different than the others. It could be a little blemish, and the other turkeys will peck it and pick at it until the sore starts to bleed. They actually pick the turkey to death. We were the last free-range turkey farmers we knew of. Turkeys were moved to houses, their beaks cut so they wouldn't harm each other, and given antibiotics so they wouldn't die of disease. My dad didn't have the heart for turkey houses. They were depressing places to him. The turkeys could hardly move. So then we moved to Van Buren, Arkansas. My mom got a job as a waitress at the Lighthouse Inn in Fort Smith on the river. Her boss was a manager named Smitty. She would bring home steak and shrimp and other delicious morsels. I never ate so well. I ate like a king. I was happy until I realized they were coming off other people's plates. It ruined it for me, and she stopped bringing me any food. So it was after one of her late nights working at the Lighthouse Inn that I accidentally woke her up coming home from school, prompting my switch retrieval. I stood in the front yard with the finger-sized switch and sobbed, partly from the injustice of it all and partly not knowing when I would be too big or too old to switch. I hung my head and shuffled to my mother's preferred switch tree. The thought, when will I be too old to switch, meandering through my head. And that's when I realized something in a flash. There wouldn't be a school announcement, the following students are too old to switch. It was going to happen when I decided. Euphoria and fear made my heart pound like never before. I crested the hill and didn't dare look back. I circled around through the brush and headed for the cemetery. My mom was afraid of graveyards, and it would be dark soon. I reached the safety of the cemetery and headed for the dark shadows of the older trees and gravesites. I figured if God was with me, there was no reason to fear anything. And if God wasn't with me, well, then I was utterly alone, and it didn't much matter what happened to me. The quiet of the dead surrounded me. The earth felt soft and old. gravestone felt cool against my cheek. I fell asleep with tears traveling across my cheek. And when I woke, the moon was high in the sky. And I went back to the house, and my dad asked if I wanted anything to eat. But he had obviously been drinking, so I said no. I brushed my teeth and I went to bed, and my mom was at work. We never spoke of that night, and the idea of switching me never came up again. On that dark, lonely night, surrounded by the dead, I learned that if you are willing to suffer the consequences, you can make your own decision, and that's really the only way to live, isn't it?
Alan Hale is a realtor in Hot Springs, Arkansas. In our final story of the night here at Tales from the South, Haley Valine's future rests in the hands of the University of Arkansas's Razorbacks, and it's not just a game.
I was in my second year of college and 1 month shy of my 19th birthday when my parents invited me to visit friends with them for the weekend. My dad was playing in a golf tournament at the Prescott Country Club, which sounds pretty fancy, but it was more of a locker room / cinder block walled meeting place than a swanky Real Housewives of Prescott Country Club. The room was full of tables, middle-aged men telling lies about how that last shot almost won the game, wives discussing work and kids, and most importantly, a big screen television. There was quite a spread of food, but I was too nervous to eat. It was September 16th, 1995. The Arkansas Razorbacks were playing the Alabama Crimson Tide at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. An 18-year-old girl was trying to make a big decision in Prescott, Arkansas. There was a lot on the line. When I graduated from high school in 1994, I was a 17-year-old only child, not quite ready to spread my wings and truly leave the nest. I chose to attend a small Christian university only 45 minutes from home, but quickly came to realize that living there and going to college wasn't quite like those glorious weekends of high school freedom and our God is an awesome God I had spent there with my church youth group. Gone were the lively games of never ever have I ever, where we covertly proved just how righteous we were and how sinful our friends were. Gone were the late nights spent solving the world's problems through teenage conversation, only to be replaced with classes, cafeteria food, mandatory chapel services, and dorm curfews. So, my sophomore year, I enrolled at UCA in Conway, still only 30 minutes from free laundry and dinner with my parents. I was now a very small fish in a much bigger pond, but I had my own one-bedroom apartment with hand-me-down furniture and Ann Getty's posters pinned to the walls. I watched Days of Our Lives and ate ramen noodles after class every day. I was on my own, but I was wrestling with a lingering pull to the northwest corner of the state, to the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, home of the Arkansas Razorbacks, aka the Hogs, the mother of all colleges in Arkansas. I traveled the pig trail to visit friends in Fayetteville from time to time. My friends had become real live sorority girls, dating real live fraternity boys. They were going to football games and parties and drinking punch out of trash cans. They were going to raucous pep rallies at the Greek Theater and wearing matching t-shirts that sported Greek letters I pretended to understand. They were living in sorority houses. They were hanging out on a miraculously funky little stretch of road called Dixon Street. I'm sure they were going to classes too. Well, most of them were. My poor mom had listened to the reasons why I should and the reasons why I shouldn't transfer to Fayetteville for months. If she hadn't been raised better, I think she probably would have told me something along the lines of using the toilet or leaving the bathroom. A decision had to be made, and I could not bring myself to make it. So, I did what any logical Southern girl would do. I decided to determine the events of my life and my undergraduate education on the result of a football game. If the Hogs won, I was transferring to the University of Arkansas in January. If not, I was staying put in Conway. Because obviously, if God wanted me in one place or the other, that football game was more important than the prayers of those in the midst of war, illness, or famine. I remember the look on my mom's face so clearly when she heard me declare my intention. It was a combination of relief and disbelief, a cross between concern for my sanity and concern for her own, and possibly a little bit of bemusement. Looking back, I'm sure she could only shake her head that her daughter was so conflicted that she would come to this decision in this way. But her words were supportive as usual, only giving me a slightly exasperated, "Are you sure?" When I said I was, she played along. To this day, I don't know if she thought I was serious. Then the coin was tossed, and the ball was kicked. It may as well have been just me in that room at the Prescott Country Club, just me and the Razorbacks. The fact that I found myself cheering so hard for my beloved Hogs came as no surprise. I had done that since the day I was old enough to talk. I grew up watching grown men scream and yell like fools, and watching my grandmother pace in front of the television until there was almost a path worn in her living room rug. I'd worn plastic hats shaped like pigs, slept in the back of a full-size red and white van on the two-hour drive home from ball games, and stood with the reverence normally reserved for funerals and baptisms anytime the fight song was played within earshot for as long as I could remember. However, on this particular day, I had never in my life been so intent on watching a football game. I held my breath as the Hogs came back from a deficit in the fourth quarter. Barry Lunny Jr. completed a 3-yard touchdown pass to J.J. Metters with only 6 seconds left in the game, and the score was tied 19-19. When Todd Latterett came on the field to kick the point after, my stomach was in knots. When the ref signaled that the kick was good, I felt a mix of emotions like none I could ever remember. The Hogs won that game 20-19. Some Alabama fans still say that we shouldn't have won because there were allegedly 12 men on our side of the ball at the end of the game. But I think it's quite obvious that there was some divine intervention keeping that ref from blowing his whistle. In January 1996, my parents dropped me off at Pomfret Hall on the campus of the University of Arkansas. After a tearful goodbye, and then another one when my mom made my dad turn around and come back for one more hug, I found myself nestled in the Ozarks and finally felt like I was home. Again, I was a very small fish in a very big pond, but I knew it was the right pond for me. There were more residents in my dorm than there had been in that entire student body of that small Christian university where I'd been as a freshman. There was also a boy in that dorm. He was a resident advisor and a trumpet player in the marching band, the same marching band that had played in the stands at that fateful football game in September. He had the happiest eyes I've ever seen. Granted, they were somewhat hidden behind very large 1996 wire-rimmed glasses, but I could see them smiling, and they made my stomach feel similar to that Saturday in Prescott. After a while, that boy became the fraternity boy that this sorority girl went to football games and drank punch from a trash can with. He escorted me to a pep rally in the Greek Theater on my 21st birthday, and we celebrated many Razorback wins on Dixon Street. We studied and went to class. No, really, we did. We have diplomas to prove it. 18 years later, my kids call that boy Daddy, all because Todd Latourette kicked a field goal in Tuscaloosa, Alabama in 1996.
Haley Palines is a wife and mother of two. Her other full-time job is special education and curriculum supervisor in a public school district. She lives in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and still loves the Razorbacks. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience here at the Historic Arkansas Museum. Thank you to the Southern Salt Food Company for providing tonight's dinner. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library. And our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, Urban Garden Montessori, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Anyway, this is a song that I wrote last year that was on a TV show called Rectify. Maybe you've seen that series. It's about growing up in Northeast Arkansas. Don't go speeding when you're driving through this town. Johnny will shut you down, and he'll haul you downtown. And old John Austin, he is talking to himself. He's walking around, and he's the talk of the town. It's another day, another day in a small town, another day in a small town. It's another day, another day in a small town, another day in a small town. And there's nothing to do on a lonely Friday night except drive to the end of town and turn around at the Church of Christ and wave to your friends as they go passing by. I got my diploma now, I'm a certified factory man. And wearing these cement shoes, I'm standing in the small town saying, it's another day. Another day in a small town, another day in a small town. Whoa, whoa. It's another day, another day in a small town, another day in a small town.
Writer accommodations provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. and the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at BakerHouseNLR.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at InfraredStudioProductions.com. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.